And good day, WJMS Radio. Welcome back to Fire It Up, the political talk show here where we talk about the mechanics and what goes on behind the curtain of politics here. I'm your man, Steve. I host the show, and this week we've got a full docket of things to talk about. So let's dive right in, okay? So we're going to start off with kind of a recap of what's happened in the week since last we talked. Well, apparently the House and the Senate have come to an agreement of sorts, which has allowed the House to send over the two articles of impeachment for President Donald Trump. So, okay, we're making progress there. Now we'll see what happens when the Senate takes a hold of it and goes into the trial phase. Are we out of the controversy woods? I don't think so just yet, but we'll wait and see, and we'll keep tabs on it for you. In other events, we came damned close to going to war with Iran because of the missile attack that killed their number two military leader, and they responded by shooting some missiles onto a couple of bases that the U.S. occupies, and looks like we're gonna head that way. It was kind of dicey there for a minute or two, but apparently cooler heads prevailed and we were able to back down from the brink of what could have been another conflict in the Middle East. So we'll keep tabs on that. That's driving some of the news headlines. You know, just another week in the life of America. So this week we're gonna take a little bit of a different tack. We're gonna talk about, in the first segment here, we're going to talk about strategic and tactical activism. Specifically, we're going to look at what strategic and tactical activism is, how we bring it into play in our quest to improve our American democracy and make it representative of the people. First, we'll start with some definitions. Strategy is a plan of action that seeks to achieve a overall goal. It defines the approach that will be taken in achieving this specific goal. Tactics follow after you've defined a strategy. It is defining your priorities and seeing specific actions to implement the strategy that you've decided on. So we can take a look at some of those. For example, a strategic operation or a strategic plan would be what is going on with the House and the impeachment process going on, you know, in Washington. Or you could look at what states are doing in terms of how they are working to continue and expand efforts at voter suppression. When you get on the tactical side, that's where you're actually taking your plan and putting it into action. Those are actually the actions that the House has taken in holding up the articles of impeachment while they tried to, you know, negotiate, cooperate, find common ground, or just plain strong arm the Senate into doing its constitutional duty and making sure that a fair trial occurred. Or, you know, if we look at the voter suppression aspect of it, it is the steps that states and local governments are taking to actually impede with use and the implementation of voting in the specific geographic areas that it's occurring. So strategy is generally the overarching principle. That is, you know, you can't really have a cohesive action unless you have a cohesive plan that drives it. You know, it leads tactics. Tactics follow strategy, and tactics are, you know, specific detailed action steps that are taken once a strategy has been decided upon. Oftentimes, you know, strategic and tactical words are interchanged, but they are actually two distinct things. So as we look at it in terms of the mechanics of politics, you know, as I said, you know, as I just said, you know, a strategy might be an overall, you know, political plan as to how a certain action is going to shape and how it's going to be implemented. And the tactical part of that is the actual doing of that plan, the steps actually taken to put that plan, you know, into motion, to make it a real thing. Now, on the other side of that coin, when we talk about activism, when we talk about, you know, as we say on this show, about being, you know, aware and educated and digging in and digging wider and deeper and gathering the facts, you know, before we take a specific course of action, our strategy is just that we are going to become more informed, that we are going to be more woke, that we are going to be, you know, more engaged with our political leaders at the local, the state, and the national level, that we are planning, we are putting together an operating thesis of how, you know, our efforts are going to shape up. And it is once we get those in place and we actually move into the action phase, whether it's, you know, getting out a voter registration drive, getting people registered to vote, getting people actually to the polls once they are registered to make sure that they can exercise that right. It's whatever process we have to put in place in order to overcome any obstacles through voter suppression that occur. These are the tactical things that help to take our plan, our strategic element, and move it into a physical action state. Again, often tactical and strategic are interchanged. And, you know, as we go forward and as we talk about this over the course of the coming year, hopefully I'll be able to illustrate for you where the separation between the two is when we are in a strategic mode and when we are in a tactical mode. So we just need to be aware, be, you know, as I said, educated, make sure we have the facts at hand, and we must ultimately become both strategic, i.e. planners, in our thinking, and tactical, you know, in taking cohesive and solid and sustainable actions in order to, you know, be and create the change that we want to see. So a little intro to strategic and tactical activism. We're going to talk more about it as we go through our episodes here week over week, and just, you know, as you become more aware of when we are talking strategy and when we are talking tactics, you know, that will become a lot more clear. So let's look at a few other examples of strategic and tactical games that are played in the political realm. For example, you know, I already cited the impeachment, but if you look back over the last, you know, 3 years or more, any time that there has been a political crisis going on, say, you know, in the Republican Party, since they're the party in power, you know, there has been some other type of activity that has been undertaken to mask that. And we're going to talk some about that in the second segment. But, you know, it is a policy, it is a deliberate intent, a deliberate set of actions that are put in place that define the strategic and tactical actions of, you know, one side and the activism that needs to be used on the other side in order to combat it. So, you know, in the example of the voter suppression that I mentioned earlier, you know, it's, you know, we have to be strategic in how we are going to counter the efforts, you know, by the party in power to, you know, marginalize, minimize, and disenfranchise the votes of, you know, minorities and, you know, Native Americans and other groups in this country that typically tend to vote Democratic, let's be clear. And, you know, obviously, you know, as I said in an earlier show last year, we talked about the numbers of Democrats and Republicans, and, you know, Democrats outnumber both Republicans and independents by a pretty wide margin, almost 20 points in both cases. So, you know, any effort that can be put in place to reduce the number of Democratic voters helps the Republican and to a lesser extent helps, you know, the independent candidates. And, you know, that determines, you know, our strategy and our tactic if we are opposing this process, in that we need to, you know, do the things and make the communications and put the plans in place and execute them to incorporate, you know, more independents to vote along with Democrats in order to overcome the efforts by the Republicans to reduce the number of Democratic votes. In at the national level, you know, when there is, you know, a action taken by the government that, you know, the opposing party does not like, then, you know, the first steps are to put together a strategy as to how to combat that, and then to put together a set of tactics or a tactical approach in putting those into action so that we can, in fact, you know, balance out what's happening at the political level. So, you know, the key is both strategy and tactics. The number one requirement is both must be done deliberately. You must have a deliberate plan, a concise, focused, organized, defined plan as to what has to be done in order to achieve a course of action, whether you know are in support of a policy or whether you're opposed to it, because it applies to both sides. And then once you have arrived at that strategic plan, then it becomes necessary to move into tactical mode to take that plan and put it into actual operation. So, you know, over the course of, you know, the last, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, we have seen a concerted effort, and I talked about this in earlier episodes, things like the Southern Strategy, where the idea was put forward that in order to achieve a long-term dominance of the political process by the, you know, conservative red Republican party in this country, a plan was put in place for a series of actions in order to consolidate power at the local and state level to form that foundation of keeping, you know, the Republican Party in control of the government for as long a period of time as possible. And, you know, part of that strategy involved a tactic called gerrymandering, where, you know, as I've defined before, when, you know, one party in a state achieves the majority in that state, particularly with the legislature and the governorship, they get to define the shape and content of the political districts used not only to assign congresspeople at the federal level to represent that state, but also to assure that that party, the party in power, maintains control of that district no matter what the breakdown of, you know, Democrat or Republican, you know, candidates are. As long as that district is drawn to favor one party over the other, that party has effective control of the government. That's the way that works. So the strategy, you know, is, you know, as I said, in the Southern Strategy or other ideas and strategic thinking that's been applied, as that plays out, that moves into the tactics as to how, you know, you make that happen. So on the opposing side of that, you know, the strategic thinking is, how do we combat, you know, the effects of the Southern Strategy? How do we combat, you know, the political districts that are drawn through gerrymandering? How do we combat, you know, the voter suppression tactics and other tools that are used, including the court system and, you know, legal impediments and physical impediments to getting a fair representative vote out each election cycle? That is, you know, a determined and dedicated plan, a defined plan, and then a set of dedicated, defined, and carried through actions that actually work to, you know, undercut the things that have been done. So, you know, looking at those, you know, and as we get into our call to action segment at the end of the show, we're going to talk about some things that, you know, we can do from a strategic and tactical side to actually create that change that needs to happen in order to move our country to a more fully representative model. Now, I'm not, you know, saying, you know, Democrats are better than Republicans are better than Democrats, but what I am saying is that in this country, we need a balanced across-the-board representation of everyone in this country in order for, you know, America to function as our founders intended and, you know, in the best interest of everyone in the country. So, you know, we will definitely spend time, you know, in future shows talking about strategic thinking and tactical action, you know, strategic planning and tactical results and so forth. But now, you know, we have that foundation to add to the others that we have built up with the course of this show. So that being said, you know, it is imperative that, as we always say, the first rule is find out the facts. Get your information from multiple sources. Get your, you know, facts in order clearly so that you understand them. Do your education, do your diligence, dig deeper, dig wider. Get the information you need to make an informed decision, one way or the other. If you're, you know, a Republican and you support the president and, you know, the actions going on in the Senate, that's fine, but make sure that you are deliberate and make sure that you have a defined plan and course of action and actions that you are going to take. If you are a Democrat and you oppose, you know, the administration and you oppose what, you know, Congress is doing, same objective. Get informed, get the facts, you know, and do your actions based on what those facts guide you to do. You know, if that means that you are, you know, occupying the office of your governor, or you're protesting in front of your state legislature, or you're calling, emailing, writing letters, tweeting, whatever, to communicate with your elected officials from the local level all the way up to the White House, whatever your course of action is, be deliberate about it. Make sure that it is fact-based, that you have done the research to find out what you need to know, what facts are relevant, and not just, you know, rumors, innuendo, and made up spin that comes out of whatever, you know, sources you're getting your news from. So it's all about being deliberate and intentional in your actions. So that's, as I said, that's the introduction. We're going to touch on this subject multiple times over the course of the weeks to come, but now you have, you know, the basics and the foundation for what is going on and how we need to address it. All right, so we're going to take our first break here, play a little bit of music, and when we come back after the break, we're going to get into another element of the political games that are played out there, and I'll do a little bit of a spoiler. This involves magic. We'll be right back after the break. You're listening to Fire It Up. This is your man, Steve, where we take a look under the hood of politics and find out how it works and what we need to do to fix it. We'll be right back on the other side of our break. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. This life we live can be kind of crazy to me. I don't know what be going on. So much is going on. Maybe it's the TV, everything that I see. Cause some things are make-believe, but some things make you believe that if you get on the other side of the fence, that your life will be much better than it is. But if you're a fat man, be a happy fat man. And if you're a poor man, be a happy poor man. I'm not trying to sit and tell you not to better yourself. But if you're alive and well, just be alive and well. This
This high society has got me wanting to be something that I am not. Want everything that I ain't got. Sometimes I wish that I could be someone other than me. But the fact still remains, who I am will never change. Maybe it's the TV, everything that I see. But some things are make-believe, some things make you believe. But if you get the other side of the fence, yeah, life would be much better. But if you're, yeah, and if you're a poor, hey, I'm not trying to sit and tell you not to pass up. On it. Ain't nothing wrong with trying to be more than who and what you are. But if you're a fat man, and if you're a poor man, I'm not trying not to better. But if you're alive and well, just be alive.
Welcome back to Fire It Up. This is Steve, your host, here as we look under the hood of politics to see how the mechanics, how the machine runs. Thank you for staying with us. We had an exciting segment in the first part of the show, and we're going to continue that. Wanted to bring up, just to tag on to what we talked about in the first segment in terms of, you know, tactics and strategies that are used. And this comes out of an article that was published in The Guardian in November last year by Carol Anderson. And in it, it talks about five ways Republicans will crack down on voting rights in 2020. And I think it is a good example of some of the things that, you know, out there and that we will face in the coming election in terms of making sure that our voting process is fair and impartial. And, you know, in the article, and I won't go through the whole thing, but I'll kind of highlight it for you. You know, the elections are going to, you know, determine, you know, the course of our country for the next 4 years and beyond. It came out of the Civil War and, you know, Reconstruction, and, you know, subsequent amendments such as the 15th Amendment, which made clear that the right to vote could not be denied or hampered because of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. And that served as a foundation for many changes that came in the years that followed, including, you know, the woman's right to vote, opening the franchise to those who were 18 and over, and, you know, the Voting Rights Act, which was a sweeping law that was signed into being that offered protections and consequences for states that, you know, took actions to suppress the vote. Now, you know, that law was challenged and in part was eviscerated in 2013, led by the Supreme Court, which declared that racism, which was the foundation of the Voting Rights Act, was essentially a thing of the past And so they, you know, gutted some of the key provisions out of the Voting Rights Act. Since then, you know, it has just been a slippery slope. We've been sliding down. More than half of the states have passed a series of voter suppression laws that targeted minority voters, breached a key wall that protected the American democracy, and greased the pathway to where we are right now with the current administration. You know, and as a result, what has had to happen since then is a concerted and overall all-out effort to slow this down through massive voter outreach and massive voter participation. A gentleman by the name of Benjamin Wittes, who is a senior fellow in governance at the Brookings Institution, wrote as part of the discussion of this action, the last line of defense against a lawless, oathless president is the electoral process. Basically stating that the vote and the exercise of the vote by the citizens is the primary and last line to defend against a president or an administration that, usurps power and, doesn't follow what the Constitution lays out for how our government is supposed to run. So the article talks about five things that Republican parties, at both the state and federal level are, going to do in the 2020 election to, affect the outcome of the vote. The first one it talks about is intimidation of minority voters. And it talks about they're, likely to see more abusive use of state power to intimidate and criminalize, Asian Americans, African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans for voting or registering minorities to vote. Georgia, in fact, has been notorious in doing this and looks to continue to do so. And over in Texas, the acting Secretary of the State at the time, David Whitley, announced in January of 2019, he had a list of 95,000 non-citizens, otherwise known as immigrants, who were registered to vote in the state. Worse yet, he claimed, 58,000 of them had already cast a ballot in an election. And he quickly turned these names over to the Attorney General of Texas to pursue criminal prosecution. Well, it turned out that that was actually untrue. The list, and according to news sources, Whitley knew this, was flawed and contained tens of thousands of naturalized citizens who in fact had the right to vote. Texas, in short, was getting ready to remove American citizens from casting votes simply because they had once been immigrants. Another tactic that might show up is curbing voter registration. And in this case, it is, in Tennessee, they tried in 2018 to criminalize voter registration drives. And their effort would fly in the face of a state that ranked at the very bottom of the nation in overall voter turnout. As the New York Times reported, when tens of thousands new Black and Latino voters were registered in Tennessee in the run-up to the 2018 midterm elections, the Republican-dominated legislature complained that many of the registration forms were incomplete and that the only viable solution was to hold those who held these voter registration drives criminally and financially accountable. Again, the court struck this down, but it illustrates the lengths and breadth of the threats that can be brought to bear to suppress voter rights in the states. And another one, the third one, and we actually talked about this in last week's episode, and that was what's called felon disenfranchisement. And, this, as I mentioned in the episode, the state of Florida enacted a law which reinstated the right for convicted felons who had completed their time and completed their probation and parole requirements and restored their right to vote to them. And this impacted 1.4 million felons in the state of Florida. In light of that, opposition, you know, identified and tried to find ways in which to mitigate this. And what they came up with was a requirement which they passed into law that felons would need to make sure they had 100% taken care of any financial obligations that were imposed as part of their sentencing, i.e. paying any penalties, fines, fees, or whatever, or restitution, before their right to vote could be reinstated, essentially shutting the door on many of these 1.4 million voters. So this too was challenged in court and has been temporarily blocked in Florida, but the judge that issued the order left enough room in his decision so that, you know, the legislature could come back and through a series of tweaks and edits and chipping away, it could still, in fact, end up being a disenfranchisement action by the state. And, you know, the last one that I'll cite is, you know, purely out of what transpired in the 2016 election, and that was the security of the actual voting mechanism. You know, Georgia and Florida and other states are purchasing voting machines that have a fundamental security flaw, which allows them to be easily hacked. And a lot of these machines that are being replaced are also happening to be impacting communities of color, thus creating the possibility of wide-scale vote disallowment due to voting machine technical issues that could make the vote suspect. So, you know, and these states are spending over $100 million on the same device that has been found to have this fundamental security flaw, but yet no one, no party, the Republicans haven't enacted any election security legislation. Even as Vladimir Putin, when he was asked if Russia will interfere in the 2020 election, jokingly stated, "I'll tell you a secret. Yes, we will definitely do it." Given that the cyber attacks in 2016, you know, targeted as a one of its primary targets were African Americans and voting systems in all 50 states, this does not look good for 2020. And the last piece, you know, partisan courthouses. You know, an overarching sign is Senate Republicans' determination to pack the federal courts with judges, more of whom than ever before have been ruled unqualified by the American Bar Association, and whose only expertise is hostility to civil rights, including the right to vote. You know, how many judges are they going to place onto the court? You know, there have been over 140 of them approved in the 3 years of the Trump administration. And keep in mind, as I've mentioned in another episode, these appointments at the federal level are lifetime appointments. That is, these judges, once appointed, will serve out either their lifetime or until they retire from the bench. So we could see impacts of this courthouse packing for, you know, 30 or 40 years into the future. And, you know, that's done. That's in place. There's nothing that can be done about that short of impeaching judges that, you know, violate their oath or break some law, you know, or are otherwise convicted of crimes. So if they stay, you know, off that radar, they're in there for life. So just some more to think about. And, you know, what do we do to try and reverse these trends, try and stem this tide? Well, the key is we've got to start at the local level And we have got to, you know, exercise our right to vote and include a broader segment of the population, whether, you know, Democrat, Independent, Republican, whatever, whatever your political party is. The key is we need to get out and vote so that the numbers reflect the demographics of America. It's not just represented by the elites. It's not just represented by those in power. And, you know, over time, that will work through the system and, you know, create the kind of change that we want to see. So, you know, we'll touch on that again in our call to action segment. But just wanted to tie all of that up into a nice bow. So, changing gears a little bit here, I hinted in the first segment that, you know, we were going to talk about magic. And lead off with that in asking the question, what do magic and politics have in common? Well, the answer to that is both use distraction to hide what's really going on. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, you know, if you've ever watched a show, there's a show out there called World's Greatest Magic Secrets Revealed, where they actually dissect how some of the most puzzling magic tricks are actually done. And what you often see and what they often describe is what is known as distraction. That is, either there will be something going on while the magician is executing the trick in question, or, you know, there'll be some type of, you know, element to take your eye off what the magician is doing while you watch something else. You know, typically it may be a beautiful assistant, or, you know, it may be a light show, or, you know, fireworks or pyrotechnics, something to make you look the other way while the magician executes the mechanics of the trick. You know, and in many cases, and you know, this is true of, you know, the politics system as well. You know, we touched on this in the first segment. You know, when something is happening that, you know, is a crisis, or something that, you know, the party in power, whichever party, because both sides play this, wants to get done, but they don't really want the American public to know about it, they will throw up a distraction. It could be an event. It could be a news story. It could be a scandal. You know, the news over the last, you know, decade has been rife with, you know, all types of activities that have occurred when, once the dust is settled, we look back and go, well, wait a minute, how'd that legislation get passed? So, you know, our attention has been taken away through distraction so that we're not watching what the other hand is doing in terms of creating policy and laws. So it raises the question of what do we need to do as educated and informed and, you know, truth-loaded voters and constituents, what do we need to do to cut through this distraction fog? Well, you know, first and foremost, we need to be deliberate and focused on the key issues that we are concerned about. By identifying those issues that are the most important to us, and not allowing anything to distract us from what's happening with that action. So, you know, for example, research has shown that, you know, even today, more than a year later, there are still hundreds, if not thousands, of children detained at the border. Now, when you research it, you'll get numbers that range from a few hundred to, you know, more than 1,000, and they're all over the place. So there's no definitive set of numbers that I have found to say how many children are still being detained, separated from their families, you know, at the southern border. But when's the last time you heard that mentioned in the news from any source? You know, it's not being talked about. It's not a hot button issue. It's an important issue. It's a critical issue. But other things have taken over the news cycles so that we don't talk about that anymore. In the States, voter suppression is still very much a thing. You know, as I just mentioned, you know, there are five strategies the Republicans want to use in order to suppress the Democratic and independent vote to better assure their chances of victory at the local and state level and up the chain toward the national level. That too, those voter suppression tactics are getting light coverage in the media, across all media. It's not being talked about as much as it was, you know, early in the year, in last year, and as a result of the 2018 midterms and so forth. It was a big issue then. It is not so big, apparently, anymore. Focused attention and action is, you know, is our main tool at making sure that these issues that are important to us as the voters, as the constituents, as the citizens, that these are kept in front of our political leaders' attention so that, you know, we can make sure that that narrative is being firmly addressed. And some of these are not subtle. The president ridiculed the Baltimore district of the late Representative Elijah Cummings, you know, calling it essentially a disgusting rat and rodent infested mess. Well, obviously, this just created a firestorm of reaction across both not only the state of Maryland and the district, but nationally, as people were outraged at what the president had said there. But in the background, underneath all that, during that time, his National Intelligence Director, Dan Coats, resigned and was replaced by, you know, a Representative John Radcliffe, who, as a Trump loyalist, indicated through past statements that, you know, he would be more favorable to the administration line on the Russian investigations in North Korea. And, you know, as mentioned earlier, 13 more conservative judges, bringing that total up to 140, were also approved with no public fanfare made about it, further expanding the number of conservative federal judges that sit on the bench. You know, these dog whistle words not only serve to stir up the conservative base of the Republican Party, but in fact, the corresponding Democratic and progressive outrage at these terms and at these tactics serves to even further mask what policy and administration actions are being taken. Again, we're not seeing what the magician is doing because we're distracted by the bright and shiny object, you know. And, you know, it and they go on and on, going from the sublime to the ridiculous. There was an absolute furor raised when former President Obama came out to the Rose Garden to deliver a message, and he was wearing a tan suit. And it just created an absolute firestorm among conservative media, and as a result, in response from, you know, Democratic and other leaders who rushed to defend the president's right to wear a suit of pretty much any color he wants to. It doesn't always have to be blue or black. So, and, you know, as we look at this, and we'll talk about in our call to action segment, you know, we've got to be educated, informed, woke, you know, and diligent in making sure that we see the real story and not get tied up and distracted. So, all right, we'll take our second break here. When we come back after the music, we will go into our call to action segment. You're listening to Fire It Up. I'm Steve. I'm your host. I'm the mechanic that gets under the hood. So we'll see you right after the break. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to WJMSRadio.com. Here we are in the prime of life,
expectations. Let's not waste them. Oh, the sunshine in your eyes could break the ice. I can tell that you deserve the best in life. If I offer you the chance to live tonight, then take it. We can make it. Don't wait till tomorrow.
Welcome back to the closing segment of this week's episode of Fired Up. I'm Steve, and I'm here, as always, giving you the inside scoop on how the political machine works here in the good old U.S. of A. And our call to action this week's going to talk a little bit and wrap up what we've talked about this episode. Most specifically, we talked about strategic and tactical activism. And I want to give you some thoughts on how you put that into place. First and foremost, as I mentioned, it's all about being informed. It's all about doing your research, doing your homework, finding out the facts about the issues that you are most concerned about, and forming the plan of how you can organize others like you in your area, and then make a plan as to how you want to approach the issue at hand, and then what actual steps you will take once your plan is formed. So the key is to make sure that you have a solid, dedicated, confirmed plan, and that that plan is based on the relevant facts of the issue. Gather those facts from as many sources as possible. And don't be afraid to go outside of your comfort zone. If you are a progressive, listen to conservative media, hear their side on the issues, talk to conservative politicians, get their take on what they see as the most important elements, as well as looking within your own base and your own support for what's important there, knowing what both sides or all sides define as the truth gives you that nugget of what the actual truth is, because it's going to lie somewhere in the middle. Whether you are on the left, on the right, on the top or the bottom or wherever, The truth is generally somewhere in the center of all of the arguments. So you want to make sure that you have a firm set of facts, that your plan of action, your strategic thinking is, you know, well thought out, well considered, and detailed, and then your action plan, your tactical activism, grows out of that strategic process so that you have a solid a plan as to how you want to implement or how you want to get the change that you seek implemented. Remember, you know, politicians, they work for us. So the more that we are in communication with them, the more that we are, you know, in front of them, expressing our opinions and our views and giving them their instructions as to how to carry out what we have put them into office to do, the better chance we have of making the change we want to see come into reality. So our call to action is to be a well-educated, well-documented, strategic and tactical person with your thoughts and your actions. You know, we also discussed about, you know, dealing with the distractions that occur in the political process. You know, as we've said, we've seen how, you know, an incident or a news item or something will be put up as a distraction to hide what is happening in the real world underlying that, whether it is legislative action that's going on that they really want to keep on a low profile and not get a whole lot of public feedback on, or it is some broader, more, you know, intense action that they want to try and move the American public away from considering, so that, you know, it is not become a crisis situation for them to have to deal with. Whether it's Democrat or Republican, both sides play this game, and we've got to become better at seeing through the fog, getting past the distractions, not paying attention to the bright and shiny objects, and getting to the truth of what's going on and what we want to see going on going forward. So those are two calls to action for this week. You know, both revolve around being informed, being educated, doing our diligence, and doing our homework. Want to pick up on some of our ongoing calls to action. Obviously, we are a little bit less at the time that you will hear this. We are, I believe, 3 weeks away from the first test of the Democratic candidate pool in the Iowa caucuses, and following those, the following week will be the Democratic primary votes in New Hampshire. Next week's show, we're going to dive into the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire vote and look at how those two dates impact and shape what the campaign going forward is going to look like from a structural standpoint. You know, as I said, we don't talk about the people necessarily unless they are directly germane to the argument, but we are going to be looking at, you know, who comes out of these, you know, who the winners are, who are the ones who don't win, and kind of what it means and how the machine will roll forward after these two first events that happen. So, you know, keep in mind, we'll be covering that in the coming weeks. Second point I want to just touch back on that we've talked about is 2020 is not only an election year, but it is also a census year. That is, everyone in the country, every resident, every person that lives in the country, whether they are a citizen, a naturalized alien, or even, you know, an undocumented person in this country will be counted as part of the census. And the census is vitally important, not only because it determines what the representation is in Congress through the redistricting and reapportionment process, but it also determines the distribution of federal dollars to things like schools and highways and hospitals and medical treatment, everything to which federal dollars flow are governed by the count of citizens that come out of the census. So it is extremely important that we not ignore the census documents that come out. Census forms will be mailed to all households of record. You can also go online and complete the census. You can do it over the phone. There are mechanisms in place for those with hearing disabilities in order to take the census online or by a TDD device through the phone system. There are all different ways, and the census is provided in 12 different languages in addition to English. So please make sure that when the census form comes in, that you fill it out for everyone in your household, whether they are, you know, legal or not. It is anonymous information. It cannot be used against you under law. It cannot be used in as any mechanism of law enforcement. So there is no risk for someone who may be concerned about their immigration status that the census is a way for the government to find you and deport you. That does not happen by law. So please do not let that impede you from filling out the census. It is vitally important. All right, so those are our call to actions for this week. We really need to focus in this important year. Remember, the national election is in November, but there may be local elections in your area. Check your newspaper. Go to ballotpedia.com, and you can see a list by state and district as to what elections may be happening in your area. Get informed. Get involved. Vote. Make sure your voter registration status is up to date and correct. Do whatever you need to do to get out and vote, and don't let anyone stop you. Because if that happens, if they are able to suppress votes, to change the game, to make it, difficult or, intimidating to exercise your rights as a citizen, that is, not what this country is about. So that is not America. All right. That's not the America we want, nor is it the America we deserve. So that's it for this week. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Fired Up. My name is Steve, and I am the host in the chair every week. We're right here on WJMSradio.com. Big shout out to the WJMS team for hosting us each week. I look forward to talking to you again next week with another informative episode of Fired Up. Thank you. Have a great week. Have a